This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on. 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It is the postseason. We're here. Let the madness begin. Well, the appetizer for the madness. It's conference tournament week on the men's basketball side, and we are geared up and ready to go here on Sports Daily. We'll get you all set for the Big 12 tournament. We'll get you all set for the AAC tournament today. Jacob Albrock here, Tommy Caster alongside me. Max Powers in producing. He's got the phone line here on KFH at 869-1240. You can also reach out to us on our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, we're all of those places. And of course, on the Odyssey app at kfhradio.com. Thank you for listening to us here. We'll give away a little HTO today. Happy to do that. We have that for you. All kinds of good stuff. It was also a wild and crazy NFL weekend. Just massive news after massive news, and a lot of it pertains to the Chiefs. So we will get to all of that today as well. We have Wyatt Thompson in joining us, the voice of the K-State Wildcats, as they are the first up during conference tournament week. They'll play tomorrow night, so we'll get you all prepped and ready for their game tomorrow. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. Good to see you. Happy Monday. Lot to get into today. You and I were texting back and forth last night. You mentioned all the NFL moves and everything. I can't keep up. There's been so much that has happened. I'm having a hard time keeping track of it all, but we'll dive into all of it today.
Ah, man. Yeah, it's how's the time change doing for you?
I was good until my alarm went off this morning and it was pitch black outside. Everything was fine. And then I forgot that it's, you know, not sunrise yet. It will be soon, but I was getting used to like getting up and driving into work and the sun was coming up and it was like feeling nice and I'm feeling motivated, energized, all of that. And then I drive into work and it's like pitch black outside. So I'll get used to it. But other than that, I'm good.
I'm team this time change, right? I'm on this side of it. I like
sure.
the sunlight at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes a bit of adjustment, especially as we move to some earlier hours here. I'm like, oh, that's pretty. I actually forgot about it. I actually totally forgot about it Sunday. And I'm looking I'm like, there is no way it's whatever time it was on my phone. I was like, 8:45? What? And then I realized what had happened. I like maybe the first time I can in my adult life, I just absolutely totally forgot about it. Didn't even think about it. Actually, I have a great daylight savings time joke, Tommy.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to it.
But I'll tell you in an hour.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Yeah, you've got to that's not even worth. Yeah. Max like looked at hitting the, you know, the drums there and then decided that it wasn't even worth it.
Well, I don't appreciate that in the new time zone. let's get back on our toes here. I know it's really technically 6:05 if you're listening to us on the first portion of the program, or you know, 9:05 feels a little earlier than it normally does. So I hope everybody is adjusting appropriately. Great day yesterday at Odyssey Day here representing at the Wichita State game. That was fun. Not the outcome, certainly, that we wanted for the Shockers. And we'll get into that as we get ready to preview their tournament. But it was a look. Listen, the energy's sort of back at Coke Arena. I've thought that the last couple of times I've been there. So that was good. That was fun. How was the Caster weekend?
It was good. What did I do? I went out and played a little golf yesterday. I hit the range yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. So went out and did that, you know, feel like you got to kind of work on the game a little bit now that the weather's getting a little bit warmer. So, I got to spend some time doing that. So that was good. Saturday we went to Exploration Place, took the kids out there to the new exhibit, which is all about sharks. So we got a chance to go and enjoy that. I had an early birthday dinner last night, out at Kobe Steakhouse with my in-laws. So we went and did that last night as well. So it was a good weekend overall.
When you have a birthday coming soon. When is yours?
I do. It's on Wednesday.
Oh, wow. Happy early birthday when I inevitably forget to tell you that on Wednesday. I've got one later this month, too. Mine's a more daunting one.
It is. You're changing the first digit of the number of your age. I'm not. I still have one more year to go. So you've got a little bit more at stake than I do.
I got to figure out what I'm doing for that. It's one of those things where it's like, do you go – do like a rager, or do you realize what age you're turning? And you know,
are you getting getting a 40th birthday party? Like, is somebody throwing that for you?
No, my wife, no, absolutely.
Why not?
I'll be throwing that for myself.
Wait a second. Didn't she get a 40th birthday party?
She got like four
40th birthday party, and you're not getting you're not getting one.
No, I'll be coming up with something here. That's how it rolls.
You have to plan your own 40th birthday party?
I believe that's correct, yes. Huh. Yeah. Unless there's a surprise one I don't know about. But we'll figure something out. It'll be good. So this month of birthdays, it's a month of postseason basketball. Like, we're going tomorrow. K-State opens it up. We'll talk to Wyatt Thompson in just a second. But K-State opens it up against Arizona State. Here we go, and we're off, right? And then KU plays on Wednesday. We get the Shockers getting underway on, I believe their first game is Thursday, correct? Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah.
And they'll play South Florida. So they get through, but their path is to Memphis, right? They're on the path to Memphis. The Big 12 tournament bracket, as we get that one laid out, KU and K-State, look, they'd have to play each other. But they both avoid Houston, and I think that's a win. I think if you look at it, that's where you don't want to be if you're in the Big 12 tournament. I don't think it's quite as clear in the AAC. I don't know that, you know, Memphis has been good, but Memphis is gettable. So I think you're probably okay. It doesn't really matter in the AAC. But it'll be fun, and we'll see if all three of these teams can take their shot. And I think they can still. K-State's not playing at that level. We'll ask Wyatt Thompson in a second, but KU and Wichita State, we'll get into the Shockers yesterday. Very disappointing second half for them. But, you know, we this is what you want, right? Chip and chair, KU will get in. Wichita State and K-State have got to play their basketball for a week here.
Well, and I also thought, and I know we'll talk about it later on in the show, I also thought that the Jayhawks looked impressive on Senior Day inside Allen Fieldhouse. Out of the three teams that we follow this weekend, KU by far looked the most impressive. The only one out of the three to win, but against a top 25 Arizona team, which, you know, I'm not sure that there were a ton of people out there that were overly optimistic that they would get the win. I think that on senior day in Allen Fieldhouse, all the tradition and history and everything lended itself to people, I think, believing that they could probably win this game out of the three top 25 matchups that they had to close out the regular season. That one was probably the most likely. But, you know, they hadn't been playing very, you know, impressive lately for sure. That's an understatement. But I thought that they looked really good. The starters looked really good. The big three looked really good. Dickinson had his best game as a Jayhawk. I think that gives you a little bit of a boost going into the conference tournament. So, all three teams, of course, have a path. I thought it was interesting for Kansas. They needed Houston to beat Baylor on Saturday to avoid Baylor in the Big 12 tournament, at least to get to the Big 12 championship. And they were able to get that. Houston beat Baylor by, I think, four on Saturday night to be able to lock KU into the sixth seed overall in the Big 12 tournament. So overall, yeah, you feel pretty good about that going into this week.
Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll get into the Big 12 tournament. We'll dig into all the college basketball that happened over the weekend. We'll talk Cats next, though. Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, joins Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up, especially today on the time change. Still very getting used to that. Everybody is. We appreciate Wyatt Thompson hopping up early with us this morning ahead of a trip down. Well, over, I should say, to Kansas City. Wyatt, it's Big 12. It's postseason week. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well. I've had a little coffee myself. I feel good about that. I haven't been really affected by the time change yet. Have you guys?
This is the first one I was telling Tom. I actually forgot about it yesterday.
Did you?
So it surprised me. So I don't know that I'm fully prepared. It takes a day. I've got my kids upstairs getting ready and everything, and they're zombies this morning. Like, what's happening? It's dark outside. I'm like, I know, guys, it'll take a day. But it's worth it. I promise we can all go play outside longer. Wyatt, it was not a good senior day for the Cats. Not a good performance, quite frankly. You got to wash your hands of it real quick, though. We think they'll be healthy at minimum going into the tournament, right? Which is, you know, as of the last couple weeks, kind of priority one. Be healthy going into the tournament. Now they have to play much, much better.
Well, they do. They did not play well Saturday. There's no question about that. They turned the ball over 17 times, shot 35% in the first half. I didn't feel like they had enough energy at the beginning, and Iowa State, give them credit. They made them pay. They started what I would describe as very aggressive. They went right towards K-State's big guys in the middle with the ball, with their bigs, and it made a big difference, I think. They got their guys off quickly, but they also made shots. And when they do that, they're hard to beat. I thought Curtis Jones was great. He had 24 points, had 11 of those at the free throw line. And just, you know, I've said it a million times this year, K-State has been up and down. They've been inconsistent, whatever you want to say. And they're their best when everybody is doing their part. And they didn't have enough guys doing their part on Saturday.
You know, I thought it was interesting, Wyatt, that K-State averaged under a point per possession in the game on Saturday. Was that a combination of things, or can you point at something, you know, specifically? Was it Iowa State really limiting the opportunities, or did K-State just have a really bad day shooting?
Well, I think in fairness, it's probably a little of both. I would not want to, you know, take anything away from Iowa State's defensive effort, because I thought it was pretty good. But with that said, I'm not going to kid you. I think if you go back and you watch, especially in the first half, K-State had some good looks, and they just didn't make shots. The one thing I didn't mention, or a couple of things that I didn't mention a while ago, those 17 turnovers equates into a 22-6 advantage points off turnovers for Iowa State. That gets you beat every day, okay? And if that doesn't get you beat, going 2 for 21 from the three-point line will. And I think K-State, I've said this a lot this year too, when K-State is just settling for threes, they're not a real good offensive basketball team. And I thought that was part of it too, Tommy, honestly.
And they'll have to shoot threes to make the kind of run they're going to have to make. I think, you know, that's such a big part of when their offense is clicking at its full strength. And we have what it was a two and a half week stretch where we did see K-State play its best basketball. They hit threes when they were playing that way, and they didn't turn the ball over much. So it gets all there for them. Arizona State is up first in the tournament. That's an interesting matchup. It's a team they split with this year. How do you feel about the matchup, though, between those two teams? Because it was a very tight win for K-State the first time they played, and then a little more lopsided when Arizona State played them back. But we didn't – Hawkins was out for that game, or
– That was the first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an interesting Arizona State team because it would be easy to say they've lost four straight and 10 of 11, and they're the best draw in the first day. That might all be true, right? Two-thirds of it's for sure true. Don't know if they're – but the thing that scares you is their ability, right? They have not played recently without Jaden Quaintance, who has not played since the K-State game here in Manhattan when they were pretty dominant. Secondarily, B.J. Freeman, that was the day going into the game here that he was removed from the team. Those are two pretty big pieces. The other night, they're at home against Texas Tech, and Adam Miller doesn't play. And I'll be honest, I haven't looked at that back this morning, and I will, but I don't know if that's discipline, whether he was hurt, whether he'll be back, you know, for the game tomorrow night at 6 o'clock or not. So they're playing shorthanded. Have to also add, though, that Josan Sanin has played pretty well lately, getting more minutes. We're seeing more of Trevor Best, who was a kid that reclassified. Yes, he's just a freshman, but he had a ball game here lately where he scored 18 points. So they're capable. They just haven't won games. And the truth is, in my opinion, I don't think they have a heck of a lot of discipline or confidence right now, and maybe that's a great thing for K-State. We'll see. Because if you get by this one, then you got Baylor and then a potential matchup with Texas Tech.
Wyatt, we've got to talk about the elephant in the room. Coleman Hawkins on Friday revealed that he's dealing with a more significant injury than I think what everybody thought. I mean, the guy's got a fractured tibia, and he's played more than 30 minutes in back-to-back games. There was that moment in the game on Saturday where in the second half he went down to the floor, grabbing his leg, all of that. I mean, you can't question his toughness, but obviously, you know, when we look at the front court, obviously David Gasson has been just consistent and really, really good, but there's not a whole lot of depth there for Kansas State. And I know that I know Hawkins wants to show his toughness and doesn't want to miss out on the postseason and all of that. It's a difficult position I would think that Jerome Tang is in going into the conference tournament, knowing the injury that Hawkins has.
Yeah, and I to be honest, I've probably known more about the severity of it a little bit longer than some, and Coleman hasn't really made a big secret of it. I mean, he took a pretty good shot to the knee, and he has a deep bone bruise there, but there was a small fracture. And I think, if I'm being honest, I think Coach Tang gave him the option to just say, I'm done, I'm good, I'm going to get ready for, you know, professional basketball. Or if you want to have a little bit of pain tolerance thing going forward, we can do that too. And Coleman is a competitor, and I think he wanted to play in these last handful of games. So I tip my cap to him on that. He didn't play well Saturday, to be honest. But that first game when he played just a few seconds short of 35 minutes on that leg, I mean, that says a lot, I think. And the depth is a problem in the front court for a lot of different reasons, but K-State hasn't gotten what they thought they would get this year out of Ugo Anyanso, and probably be fair to say Buddy Rich and that kind of thing. So it is significant when you have that type of an injury to, you know, one of your lead guys, without question.
So if it's, you know, Hawkins may be hobbled, and it's not, they don't lean on him totally in offense, I suppose, but it, you know, Doug McDaniel needs to get back to that stretch of great basketball that we saw. I think, right? Is he the guy who needs to sort of relight the fire? Is it somebody else? I think Gasson's going to be, you know, consistent as he's been all year. If Hawkins is limited, we need to get a little more out of Doug. He went 10-10, 13-14 his last four games. I think we need to see that up closer to 20, or am I off there?
No, I think that's probably accurate. But here's the thing. I will stress this because I think it is absolutely true. In the last handful of games, I think Doug has played well, but he hasn't shot well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has had really pretty good assist to turnover games. I think he's been a good decision maker and playing with a lot of energy on both ends of the floor. I don't think coach has really much of a problem with his game other than making shots. And you know, to be honest, looking at what he did on Saturday, you know, he goes 3 of 11, 1 of 5, but makes 7 of 8 free throws. They just need more out of him if they're going to get a little bit less from Coleman. And I think I go back to the settling for the threes and playing, you know, with just some serious passion. When they do that and they're moving and getting paint touches and kickouts, that's when they hurt people with threes, as opposed to getting down on the shot clock and just having to throw up a 22, 23 footer. That's probably true with everybody, but it certainly is absolutely factual with this bunch. They've just got to be better offensively, no question about it. I think their effort on the defensive end has been okay.
Where in the world, Wyatt, would this team be without David Gasson? And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that you know. Of course, all the attention is always going to be on the newcomers, and you know all of that this season. But he's been so consistent, especially down the stretch for Kansas State. I mean, like, they've needed him, and he's been able to deliver.
You know, he made a comment in a little media gathering on Friday to lead into Senior Day on Saturday, and I think it caught some people by surprise. When he said this has been a year that's been difficult when you're trying to learn 11 new faces. Most guys haven't gone there. but I think David has enough skin in the game now with 3 years here that he can say that. And probably everybody's going, yeah, I see it, right? It has been a challenging year from that perspective. And that's why I think you're seeing Coach Tang get a couple of commitments from high school players to try to build a foundation, try very, very hard with player retention after this season with this group of those that are available to come back. And then, knock on wood, hopefully Max Jones will be a part of that with another year. So then you have to replace Coleman and David and what have you. Those will be hard replacements, right? Both of those guys are probably going to be recognized in some way, shape, or form with, you know, second, third honorable mention type stuff with the Big 12. So work to do, but I just, at the end of the day, I appreciate David's honesty there, because it has been tougher than I think all of us thought it was going to be.
It's been a revelation. All right, so let's envision the Cats here playing good basketball, right? I don't know, it's probably too much to ask for them to go back to what we saw in their stretch of great basketball, but who knows? But let's just assume they come with the energy. You talked about Arizona State. Right now, their path would go through, in that second game, it would go through Baylor, as you mentioned, and then it would go through Tech, and then potentially KU. They avoid Houston. So, you know, what do you think it's a good draw, isn't it? Like, it's, as draws go in this league, like, you kind of like this one. How's the team feeling about their chance? Like, it's really unfortunate to have that kind of loss on Senior Day, because I don't think you get a true feel for what the team's, you know, thinking, at least going in. But what do you think they're thinking? Do you think they've got the right attitude and the right mindset, as much as we've talked the X's and O's? But this is a team that started so slow, and everything was a mess, and then it got all put together correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That mental part of it, do you think they're where they need to be there?
I'll be honest with you. I don't know. That's the hardest part with this group. I have seen them be cut in and be really, really good. I've seen them where they were Saturday, where I felt like they wanted to play well. They wanted to go out on a good note at home, but I just didn't think that they had the same energy level that they needed, and they get behind early. And, you know, there's just such a big hill to climb against a top 10 team. And I think Iowa State is that, even through their ups. And I mean, they're still 23-8. I mean, right. They've had a few games here lately, but it's the Big 12. And it's difficult, but I don't know how to answer that, because I think either is on the table here, Jacob, if I'm being honest. I wish I were smart enough and good enough to know what we are going to get tomorrow night, because I really don't know. I'm hopeful, though, with, you know, it's close enough. There'll be a lot of Kansas City area K-Staters there. That'll help. Maybe they'll get off the deck early and get the sizzling again. Who knows? Hard to figure this team.
Really quick, Wyatt, K-State women's basketball fell in the quarterfinal over the weekend against West Virginia. Aoka Lee is expected back for the NCAA tournament. You know, but obviously that's been kind of an ongoing injury and that she's been dealing with for quite a while. I think the big question remains right now, are they going to get selected as a host team for the NCAA tournament? What do you think the ceiling is for this team? I mean, I know a lot of it's going to be dependent on Aoka Lee and her health going into the NCAA tournament, but is this a team that we could potentially see make a deep run, or do you think that they're limited?
Well, I'd be kidding you if I didn't say, yeah, they can, and they're capable, because I do think they are. Whether they have a full Aoka Lee or not, it's probably a little bit of a stretch to think she's going to be going from where she was, you know, late season and their short run in the tournament, you know, to a 32-minute-a-game player in postseason. That's probably expecting a little bit much. But we saw Kennedy Taylor play really well in that game against West Virginia. That was a high-level game, guys, and West Virginia's good. They just had a player at the end of the game that made a couple of plays. That Quinterly girl has hurt K-State before, right? And I would tell you the top of the Big 12 women's conference is really, really good. TCU, Baylor, West Virginia, K-State, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. I mean, they're all darn good teams. I think it's just so close as to whether they will host or not. I mean, you look at some of the projections, a lot of them are in that five area now where they need to be four. And that's why I think if they could have gotten the West Virginia game, I really think they probably would have hosted. But that's just my opinion, and I'm pretty biased. It's going to be razor tight. But you know, even if they are a five and they have to go, I think they're capable. Because if Kennedy plays like she did in the tournament, you've still got, you know, a lot of quality players. But it's about matchups and doing it when you have to do it. And that's what makes the NCAA tournament great from my perspective. No gimmies out there, boy. You don't get protected and you get to the big dance.
Yeah, and we hope Aoka Lee can play with a boot on the other foot, I think, before the last game. But the thought is she's still going to try to go. So, I don't know how much they'll be able to. It's too bad, right? Coleman Hawkins and Aoka Lee both dealing with significant injuries, going right into the most important games. But we'll see. All right, Wyatt. So we've got basketball. The turn is quick tomorrow. Hey, at least the drive's not long. But 6 o'clock, or is it? Yeah, 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
start
6 o'clock
against theirs, which means we'll have you at 5 here on KFH. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. I always love going to Kansas City for the tournament. They really do a great job there, and there's so much going on in the Power and Light, and it's really a great thing for fans, right? And for those programs like Arizona and Utah and some of those that are coming for the first time, I'm anxious to see what they think of it, just because they really prepare for it, and they take a lot of pride in what they do. And I've always enjoyed my runs there, and some have been better than others, of course. But I'm hoping that K-State can be there a couple, 2 or 3 days. We'll see. Knock on wood.
All the Iowa State fans don't drink all the beer.
Yeah. Well, there's a legitimate chance of that, Jake.
They're going to try. They're going to try. They always do.
Droves, men and women.
They do a good job. They work hard down there. All right, Wyatt, yeah. We appreciate it. We'll catch you on the air tomorrow.
You got it, guys. Appreciate you. Thanks.
There goes Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats. Always appreciate his insight here on Sports Daily. Locked in, of course, as he calls all of them, K-State's chances Have you been to the Big 12 tournament, Tommy?
I've never been to the Big 12 tournament. I'd love to. I never have.
It's one of my absolute favorite events. I mean, it is. It is absolutely one of my favorite events. First time I go, though, it's late. Yeah, I don't even remember. I mean, this was a decade ago. I don't remember which team, KU or K-State's playing the late game. So you finish up late, all your work's done. It's, you know, probably midnight, 1 a.m. Just kind of walking around Power and Light. This first time been Power and Light, everything. And I make like a wrong turn and I end up on the backside of like all the bars and stuff. And I don't know how to explain it other than like, just, it was a mountain of empty kegs. Like it was just like a mountain high, it looked like. And so then I go in and it's 90% Iowa State fans still going strong. Let's continue to talk a little college hoops as we are in conference tournament week. There's a ton of NFL news, I know, and we will cover it all. Tons of it pertain to the Chiefs. We'll see if we even get the opportunity to go through some of the other NFL news, but we'll at least cover what's been happening with the Chiefs because it's been a ton on and off the field. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but let's continue college basketball here, Tommy. Let's continue in the Big 12 in KU, and then we'll get to the Shockers, but look, you and I have talked as much as people can talk about KU, about how realistic their chance to do anything in the postseason is. I think peak panic mode was after the Utah trip, and then it just sort of has settled in after that, right? To the expected, I would say. We asked, you know, what would it take? They went 3-2. We sort of thought they'd go 3-2. At least I did, or better. Maybe you didn't think they were going to be able to beat Tech, Houston, or Arizona. They have a very impressive senior day against Arizona. That's the first win against a good team. Boy, they've had since Iowa State on February 3rd.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. It had been a long time. I think I've probably been a little bit more bullish on their tournament chances. I'm curious if Saturday did anything to lean you back that way, because that's the path for them. What they did Saturday is the path for them.
Yeah, it did. It honestly did. I mean, I'm not like, you know, overly like crazy optimistic about what they can do, but it wasn't just the fact that they beat Arizona. It was the way in which they did it. And, you know, Hunter Dickinson had a phenomenal game. He's had really good games recently, and he has looked like an All-American. He's looked like the MVP of the team.
He's an All-American. Yeah, there's no question.
But I'm telling you, he looks the part. He's looked the part, you know, recently for sure. He looks like, you know, the Big 12 Player of the Year out there. You know, 33 points, that's the most points he's scored in a Kansas jersey. He matched that one time when he was with Michigan. But it wasn't just the fact that he scored 33 points. It was the fact that he was 8-for-9 from the field. You know, and so incredibly efficient. When he touched the basketball, he was scoring. So that was big. And it wasn't just not just that he was getting shots at the rim, and he was attacking inside for sure. But he was able to do, you know, a little bit outside of that as well, outside of just the paint. KJ Adams had a really good game as well. He was 5-for-7 as well in the first half. So, and Dickinson's 8-for-9 was in the first half. So like those guys, they got it done, and Zeke Mayo was able to make some shots when he's been struggling recently as well. So all those things fit together and made it a really good effort from the starters. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say that I feel better about their chances, not only this week in Kansas City, but also when they end up in the NCAA tournament next week.
It was good to see them play good offense, right? Because they didn't play good defense in the second half. And so, you know, that's sort of been a recipe for them, right? Just like out of this world defense in one half, and then in the other, it kind of falls apart. Well, that did happen in this game. The good thing is their offense was good enough to make up for it. We haven't seen that much. Can that offense travel? I don't know. I'm leery of that. So for me, it's like they cannot have those halves where they don't play as well defensively. We've seen it a million times this year. They have to lock people down for two halves of basketball.
They didn't. They didn't. They only did it for the first half. Like they weren't able to do that in the second half.
Right. That's what I mean. Like that's why it was nice to see their offense make up for another half of basketball in which they didn't play nearly as high level of defense as they did in the other. I think, you know, as we look to the tournament in these games, like, they have to lock people down for two halves. Cannot have that let up at all. And look, Arizona and Caleb Love had a lot to do with that. I get it. But they're going to play a lot of great offenses from here on out. So you just can't have that let up. I don't know that the offense is going to translate on the road. We haven't seen it translate on the road. I'm not going to count on it. I mean, if they get lucky, great. And when I say lucky, I mean, they actually hit some three-pointers. Great. If they hit a bunch of threes, nobody's going to beat them. But they don't do that. So I don't want to count on that. What you can count on is high-level defense, and they must do that for two halves of basketball in the postseason, you know, this week, whatever. But certainly in the NCAA tournament. But yes, I like this team far more than I liked last year's team. I just do have all year. They certainly have the ability to let you down. There's no question about it. Now they have to take it on the road and beat good teams, or at least on neutral courts the rest of the way and beat good teams. I love seeing that from Hunter Dickinson on senior day. Hunter Dickinson's been much maligned this year, not just from me, because I've had, you know, problems since the beginning of the year with how it all fit together. But he is an all. You said he might be. He's an All-American. I mean, he's been
playing like an All-American the last few games, and he is. There were some
He'll
games
beat
where
an
he didn't.
All-American.
I know, but my point. I'm not saying that, you know. Oh, it's surprising that all of a sudden he's playing like an All-American. I'm saying, like, he absolutely showed over the weekend against Arizona, yes, that he is an All-American. If I made it sound like I was questioning whether or not
he's
an All-American.
No, you're not.
He for sure is.
I'm just saying, like, he's going to be an All-American. That's not what I meant. Like, but it's that's been the case all year, even before Saturday. That's not what people's had a problem with, though. It's the fit of everything. And I think his game so much is predicated on who they're playing. If you get him a good matchup, he's got like the Tim Duncan effect. Like, he's automatic down there. If he's able to get his position down low, you're not stopping him at all. And so that's a matchup thing, I think, for KU. He's very much a matchup thing for KU. For teams that are able to take him away, I think that's where it gets really interesting for KU. They've had a lot of games lately where Dickinson and KJ Adams have been leading the way offensively. I don't know how much that's going to work in the post. I mean, I hope it does, because then KU's chances are great. I still do think they're going to have a guard in each game step up and hit shots. I don't care which one it is. It could be Coit. It could be Mayo. It might even could be Harris in a spot chance. Maybe it's Griffin. I don't care who it is. I don't think, though, they can live and die through Dickinson and KJ Adams once we get into I'm not talking about the Big 12 this week, but once we get into the NCAA tournament, I don't think you can live and die that way.
I think you can, but it's all going to be predicated on what you do on the other end of the court.
Right.
If you live and die by Dickinson and Adams, that's fine. If those guys are efficient and they're effective in the post, that's fine. But you can't give up 57% from three in the second half against Arizona. Like, that's what they did in the second half. And Arizona is not a good three-point shooting team. But they made them look like a great three-point shooting team in the second half on Saturday. If you go up against a team that is equal or better shooting the three in the NCAA tournament, and there's going to be a lot of teams in your draw potentially that are going to be able to do that, and you give them space defensively to get those threes off throughout an entire game or even just in one half, then it's going to be an early exit for the Jayhawks in the NCAA tournament. So you can absolutely run that offense through Hunter Dickinson and through KJ Adams, and then cross your fingers and hope that Zeke Mayo or somebody else can hit a couple of threes to take care of that. That's fine, and that could work for the Jayhawks, but you have to play lockdown defense on the other end, and you can't allow your opponent to get off a bunch of threes, because if you're going to combat made threes with twos in the paint, you're going to lose every single time.
Well, yeah, made threes. And look, that we all fear, right, the matchups. I've seen some, well, the brackets might have them playing like Alabama, and you're like, no. Play somebody else. Like, play Tennessee, right? Get into that regional, because that's what you don't want, right? You don't want a team that can come out and shoot it. You want that, because that, just like last year, in sort of the same way, that's going to be the problem. But again, lock it down defensively, and it doesn't matter. And the other thing is, Bill Self played his seniors a lot yesterday, so I don't even know how much we take away from the rotation. It was senior day. He just played his seniors. Maybe that's
yeah,
what
you didn't see it. I think there were two bench points total in the game, and that was two from Badunga. Other than that, like, it was all the starters.
He let his old guys eat on senior day because he's Bill Self, and that's what you do. All right, let's look at bracketology here for just a second. Austin asks, with the way they've been up and down, is there a shot they get into the Wichita Regional, or what would need to happen for that to happen? They'd have to get lucky, Austin. I will say, though, it's very slim but possible, because it looks like Houston and Tech will come to Wichita. It looks like some combination of Houston, Tech, and Texas A&M, like two of those three, will likely come to Wichita. If Houston's a one seed, which is what you hope for right now, you hope Houston stays on the one line, and then Tech or Texas A&M stays on a two line, and then you get two of those in Wichita. Why do we hope that? Well, because right now, KU is on the brackets looking like a 7 or an 8 seed. Okay, 7s and 8s end up in the same regions as 1s and 2s. So if it's Houston, Tech, or Texas A&M that end up in Wichita, that leaves open the door for some outside stroke of luck, or maybe stroke of attendance draw or money making, that the NCAA would gift KU a 7 or 8 seed, and everyone will, you know, raise their hands and be upset about it and all those things. But we'd love it here, right? Like, that lucky draw. I don't think it will happen, but as far as seed lines, if it ends up that way, if they stay as a 7 or an 8, I mean, you almost don't want them to play up to a 6, right? If you want them to come to Wichita, you just want them to kind of stay in that 7 to 8 range. And then you want Houston, Tech, or Texas A&M to end up as the 1 and 2. And that would be the path to answer Austin's question. Highly unlikely, though, the NCAA would gift them that.
Yeah, both ESPN and CBS Sports right now have Kansas as a 7 seed. The opponents are different. ESPN, Joe Lunardi, has them taking on Arkansas, the 10 seed there, and Calipari. That would be an interesting matchup. And then the winner of that game would face either Alabama or the 15 seed, if 15 can, you know, upset Alabama. And then Jerry Palm with CBS Sports has them again as the 7 seed, taking on Indiana as the 10. The winner of that matchup they've got right now is Tennessee, and then the 15 seed if the 15 can upset Tennessee. USA Today has not updated their bracketology since Friday, so we don't know, you know, where things stand after the game on Saturday. But their last projection had Kansas as an 8 seed, taking on Vanderbilt as the number 9. So, you know, I'm sure that they'll update it here shortly, and we'll probably see them, I would think, move up to that 7 line. It's kind of a, at least right now, consensus that, you know, they're at a 7 right now. I don't know what it will take in the Big 12 tournament to get them bumped up to the 6 line, or if they're kind of locked in that 7 range.
Oh, a run would bump them up, I think. But
wins they would need to get up to that 6.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. All right, we'll talk Shockers when we come back, and a ton of NFL news to get to. Another hour of Sports Daily right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is another hour here of Sports Daily. Let's start you off with a chance to win some HTO if you would like to win free iced tea. More than 26 flavors to choose from. You can grab a cup right now at the text line, which is 20357. So here's what you do. You text the keyword T to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. You enter that code, you get a chance for a free T. You'll be able to cash that in East or West Wichita or down in Derby. Good luck, everybody. That's T 20357. Continue our conversation here for some college hoops, Tommy. And we will go to Wichita State now, senior day. The Shockers, well, the Shockers didn't play well in the second half. They got themselves in a hole in the first half, which was obviously not good. And then they come back and they're looking great and they've got all the energy and everything's there. And then, man, things fell apart for them in the second half. And it fell apart in an area we haven't seen out of them in a while. And we just talked about this with KU. KU sort of had the problem. Wichita State hadn't had the problem, relatively speaking, where they've had big let-ups defensively, at least not very often. But boy, did they in the second half against Tulsa. Just easy bucket after easy bucket after easy bucket for Tulsa down low. And, you know, on their way to a 62% second half from the floor. I mean, Tommy was layup after layup, and it was weird. It didn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense. We haven't seen, I don't remember the last time we saw the Shockers do that when it wasn't just another team firing away from three. But that's what happened. And that's why they lost that game. They had no answers for whatever it was Tulsa was scheming up in the second half. They almost gave up 50 points in the second half to Tulsa. So I don't know what that was. I hope they can wash their hands of it real quick and be over it, because that'll get them busted real fast. But again, same thing with the Shockers, Tommy. Wasn't the energy, wasn't the effort. I think it was probably something schematically that was getting them there in that half. But I kind of am ready to just throw that in the garbage can and look ahead at the things that Wichita State's been doing much better in the second half of conference play.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, they in conference play at 8-10, and they had an opportunity to get it back to .500 with the win against Tulsa at home. And you know, I know that at the end of the day, that's not the most important thing, especially right now. You need to make a run in the conference tournament and all of that. But it would have been so nice to be able to say this team, after starting 1-7 in conference play, was able to get all the way back to .500 and finish out the conference season that way. So that's extremely disappointing. There's a lot of disappointing things out of that game yesterday. The fact that the senior day winning streak was snapped. They hadn't lost on senior day since 2018. So, I mean, just a lot of different disappointing things. And I think the fact that, you know, you got swept by a Tulsa team that is objectively not as good as you, it's inconceivable to me. I'm not even sure how to express how disappointing that is.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And it's in a weird way that it happened. It didn't ultimately, I don't believe, have any impact on their seeding or anything else in the conference tournament. It's funny watching that game with my family, who loves basketball, but doesn't they don't eat, breathe, and sleep it like us and the people that listen to this show. So I was getting a lot of really simple questions, and it was really funny to get those simple questions. just talking to my kids, and they're like, well, are we going to beat this team? I'm like, yeah, you know, they should beat this team. We're better than this team. And then as the score's happening, I'm like, sometimes the better team doesn't win. So you're trying to explain that to them. And then there's my wife, who looks at basketball in very simplistic terms, which sometimes is great. And two things she kept saying, she was like, why can't they stop that play where they just keep getting easy layups? And I'm like, that is a great question. I have no idea. It's really strange how many layups they've been able to make on this stretch. And then the other one that she said, and she's said this before, because we've been to several Shocker games, she's like, why can't we make more threes? That's a problem, right? That's not what they do. Well, why can't they just get better at that? Why don't they just practice that? I don't know. Right. I don't know why there aren't any 3-point shooters, but it's hard to but we don't really want them to. Right. Because they're not good at it. Right. That's not a good thing that they just take a whole bunch, even though that's not where they're good. And none of that changes. So how do you play good college postseason basketball when you can't shoot three, Tommy? You have to, just like KU, you have to lock them down defensively. Something Wichita State, for the most part, down the second half has done a great job of. They did not against Tulsa in the second half. They did fine in the first half. Something happened in that game. So whatever that kind of adjustment was, there's going to be a lot of film time, I would guess, in the next couple of days to try to figure out how Tulsa attacked them that way, because that's the tape everybody's going to use on them in the post. What did Tulsa do in the second half that was giving Wichita State fits, and how do they fix that real quick? Because if they don't erase that immediately, they're going to get bumped early.
I think on top of that, too, that there's a real big fear about how do they start games? And not just starting games, how do they start games? And then how do they start after halftime? Because it wasn't good to kick off the game or to kick off the second half for Wichita State yesterday. And at one point I checked in, like I missed the very beginning of the game, and I checked in, and all of a sudden, I think Tulsa was up like 17-8 or 19-8 or something like that.
When we made our way to our seats.
And I'm like, what is happening? Like, what is going on here? And like that happened. And then they're able to rattle off a run and get right back into the game. They enter halftime tied. You're like, okay, like they're in it. It's senior day. They should be able to pull away in the second half. And then Tulsa comes out with an 8-0 run to kick off the second half. And you're like, what are we doing? Like just right back into the hole that they were in before. So I don't know if that's a, if that's an energy thing, if that's, I don't know what that is. If it's a schematic, but regardless, the way that Tulsa started the game and the second half, that absolutely Wichita State cannot have that happen to them in the tournament. They've got to try to find a way to combat that, because in a conference tournament, it's going to be that much more difficult to try to claw your way back when you fall behind big, even just once, much less twice.
Right. That's too much. And the first, it was never energy. Like they're on loose balls. They're battling for rebounds. They didn't get some foul calls in the second half that they should have. But it didn't deject them necessarily, but it certainly exacerbated how difficult it was for them to score. Because their offense must run through contact down low. I mean, we've said this 100 times, they are best attacking the basket and getting to the free throw line. That's when the Shockers are their best. They should have gotten more calls than they did, certainly in the second half. They should have had more than 14 free throws, but that's kind of the way the refs were calling the game all the way through. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to react to that, like if they're not getting the calls, because they have to attack the basket. That's got to be their offense. And quite frankly, I like it. Like they have enough players that are good at it. Between Bell and now Cortez has sort of become this revelation there, and Harlan Beverly's always been good at it, and he's sort of feeling it. Those things have to stay true, and then you let Corey Washington and maybe some Quincy Ballard try to clean up down low. Like, I don't think the offensive game plan changes based on what we saw against Tulsa. I think it was fine. I think the defense, though, they've got to be the best defense in the tournament. And they can be. They've showed us that this year. But that's their only path, right? Is their effort, again, I'm telling you, the effort was there and was fine. It wasn't that. There was something schematic happening in the second half where Tulsa figured some flaw out, and they just attacked it and attacked it and attacked it, and the Shockers could not get it figured out quick enough before they found themselves in a big hole. Shockers are not a team equipped to come back. And like you said, they did it twice.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're not that kind of offense. They can't let that happen. They overcame it once. They couldn't overcome it twice. So what does that mean for the tournament as they get ready to play on later this week on Thursday? It just means no defensive lapses. And they open with South Florida, which, you know, they've struggled against that team. And
South Florida beat them by 19.
Yeah.
January.
I'll have to go back later in the, we'll try to get Taylor Eldridge in to give us like an X's and O's breakdown of why that happened later this week. I'll try to get him in. But yeah, it was tough. It was a tough way to go on senior day for a group of seniors that I really like, actually. I appreciate that Wichita State was able to get this thing turned around the way they did. What does it mean? Big picture. We don't have to think about that yet. Let's think about the conference tournament. We know they can beat every team in this conference. They got to go out and do it 4 times in a row, though, if they're gonna try to get to the next step. So we'll take that first. All right, man, it has been a wild handful of days in the NFL. We have a ton to catch up on here from the weekend. So let's do it this way. When we come back, we'll kind of tackle everything as it pertains to the Chiefs, and then we'll try to get into everything else that's been happening around the Chiefs as well. That's coming for us here. If you missed anything in the first hour, you can go back and listen at kfhradio.com or on the Odyssey app. Thanks for being with us here. Max Power will take your calls at 869-1240, your comments on social, Also, welcome anytime. You can watch us on 12 News Plus, on X, on Facebook, on YouTube, all the ways. Here we go. Here, the sun's out now.
Hey, finally. Good. Good. I'm glad. Hey, I'm glad to jump into some NFL talk, too. We've got a lot to get to with the NFL.
Dude, it's wild. Wild. We'll talk about the Chiefs stuff next.
You gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Hey, we got a Wichita State coaches show tonight on KFH. 6 o'clock will be baseball talk. It's the Brian Green show, and then you get Paul Mills show at 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock, you'll have the Christy Breadbinner softball show. So it's a busy night of Shocker Sports here on KFH. You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240, of course, for Shocker Talk, or listen online at kfhradio.com. You can also catch it on the Odyssey app.
Hey, by the way, quick quick shout out to Shocker Baseball sweeping Missouri State over the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, they had a tough start to the season. They're still under 500, but they're getting back into it. They had a walk-off win yesterday to complete the sweep against Missouri State. So, shout out to them. They're getting right back into it.
They needed to get healthy, and they are. And I've been telling people privately, like, wait till conference play, let them get healthy, and then we'll get a better idea. They've been very unlucky to start the year, so hopefully that is behind them now. And Shocker softball had a tough opening conference weekend. They're going to have some work to do. Shocker softball, they're not used to this. Kind of a retooling a little bit this year. All right, Tommy, the NFL has been fast and furious this weekend, and it is so difficult to keep up with it when it happens on the weekend. Let's start with the Chiefs, because there's about a billion other massive, massive things that have happened. The Chiefs weekend started, though, with some bad news. Xavier Worthy was arrested for a domestic situation. They immediately put out a statement, his team, and said there is some read between the lines, extortion type stuff happening. The charges were ultimately dropped later in the day. I believe this all happened sort of overnight and then later into the day. The charges were essentially dropped. I don't know if there's anything more that's going to come of this. I think if everything stays the way it is right this second, based on those proceedings, I would say Worthy is probably clear of discipline from the league. Probably. There will be circumstantial stuff that I assume the NFL will still need to look at with the case, whether or not there are charges or not. But, you know, unfortunately, we see this too often in the league. And I don't know what to do about it, but we'll just have to sort of let that one play out. But either way, that situation exists, Tommy. Let's just leave it there, right? That situation exists. And so we also then later in that, so this was all Saturday, I believe, the Chiefs go and they give Hollywood Brown essentially the same contract over again, right? A year and $10 million. So, okay, that makes you feel better about anything potentially happening with Worthy. Hollywood Brown is back. Whether he was going to come back, I don't know if it had anything to do with Worthy. Don't know. Either way, they're set now. Like, you can cross receiver off the list, because in some capacity, they'll have a combination of Worthy, Rice, and Brown, maybe all three of them at once for a lot of the season, maybe two of the three for various portions of the season. But when you put that with Kelsey and Gray, and then you have all the other, you know, kind of cast of characters at receiver, they're good, right? They're good at receiver. I don't think they'll need to address that in the draft. At least I don't think they would. Doesn't mean they won't, but I don't think they'll need to.
I think if they do, it might be like a mid-round or a late-round pick, a draft or that sort of thing. But I don't think that needs to be a major priority. And I wouldn't be shocked if they even, you know, potentially found a team-friendly, cheap deal with a free agent, you know, another free agent, whether that's Juju or, you know, like a returner, or if they go find somebody else. So they might not be 100% done, but at least the nucleus of the playmakers at wide receiver, I think they're probably done.
I mean, I'd love for it to be Juju because he can back up the role, essentially, that Worthy and Rice play and let Hollywood stretch the field. So Juju would make a lot of sense. And then they also extend Nick Bolton, right? And I think, at least I did, of the defensive free agents, I prioritized him. I thought Amenihue was going to get too expensive. I think that's happened. And unfortunately for Justin Reed, a player I've liked a lot, they're just deeper behind Reed than they are behind Bolton. So Bolton made the most sense. He's the kind of he wears the hat, the microphone, all that stuff. All of this happened though, Tommy, because earlier on Saturday, Ronnie Stanley re-signed with the Ravens. So, or was it Friday? Friday or Saturday?
No, it was yesterday that Ronnie Stanley re-signed with the Ravens.
Okay, so I'm a little out of order. So it went Worthy situation, Brown, Stanley, Bolton. I thought they used some of the Brown money. No. Maybe they just had an idea. Okay. So either way, Ronnie Stanton, this is what we thought would happen, right? And it also answers this question of that I've had from the beginning. I've asked you this 50 times. Why are the Ravens letting Stanley go? Well, they didn't, right? And ultimately, he got a contract that was very comparable to Orlando Brown. He actually got a contract I think we'd all loved him to get, $20 million a year. I think we all feared it'd be higher than that. So he actually stays in Baltimore. Okay. Then you get this money spent other places, right? At least Nick Bolton for sure. We'll probably see more of it with Trey Smith. I think that's still
on the table. There's more. And I don't know if you caught this or not, but last night Trey Smith signed his franchise tag. So
I didn't.
He has signed that tag to play on the tag this upcoming season. The plan is, or at least the hope is, that they can work out a long-term deal
in
the future. Yeah. But that's not. Yeah. It doesn't sound like that's anything that they're going to be working on like right this second, or that is imminent to be happening anytime soon. The everything I've read says that the at least immediate plan is that he'll be playing on that tag for that money this upcoming season. On top of that, also with Ronnie Stanley, Albert Breer from the NFL Network reported that the Chiefs were going to make a run at Ronnie Stanley, and they were willing to, at least according to him, offer a comparable deal to what he ended up signing with the Ravens. So that money was there. So it's interesting that, you know, Stanley re-signs with the Ravens yesterday morning. Sounds like the Chiefs were going to make a run at him. Now they had this money and they pivoted and ended up giving Nick Bolton that money. So had Stanley not re-signed with the Ravens, I don't think that it would have been likely that we see Nick Bolton sign that deal yesterday with the Chiefs.
So I'm trying to catch it because I did not see the tag on Trey Smith. I think he's going to still sign an extension because I think it makes more financial sense for the Chiefs to get him on an extension.
I don't know if he's interested in signing an extension right now. Like from what it sounds like, he's willing
Rappaport
to play.
Said they'd still like to work out a long-term
deal.
They would,
but it doesn't sound like anything like that is imminent right now. From what I've read. Now, maybe everybody that I've read is wrong on that, and they'll have an extension soon, but I've read three or four different sources that say that at least Trey Smith right now is content to play on that tag.
I think either way, I think he's content to play on it, too. I just think they can get him. I mean, he's going to make $23.5 million on the tag. Unless he wants that number over a number of years, but he shouldn't because he's a guard. Otherwise, they'll save money on a year-by-year basis. There's a lot of people.
It's going to be good for the Chiefs if they can get him on a long-term deal. Like, I'm not suggesting they don't want to do
this
that.
Year
I'm just saying that I think that, at least from what I've read, Trey Smith is willing to just play this year on the tag. I would be, too.
Well, he'll overplay his hand if he does that, because as a guard, he's not going to make that kind of money. I don't know. Either way, there's a lot of shade being thrown at the Chiefs for investing that much money in a middle linebacker and a guard. I would caution against that shade. I think, look, they've been able to do some of these things without the inevitable restructures that are coming. So that still frees it up. And if you've seen some of the, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, if you've been paying attention to some of the funny money going other places right now, I don't hate the decision to pivot here. it obviously emphasizes the elephant in the room, which is left tackle. But they weren't going to get Ronnie Stanley anyway. He re-signed in Baltimore. So if they're, according to Albert Breer, backup plan is in play here, there are a couple other free agents. We'll see what they do. They can always re-sign Humphreys. They can always re-sign Donovan Smith. And I think if they did either of those things, they would still draft a left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I like Nick Bolton. I like Hollywood Brown. I like the fact that they have those guys back. I do. I like the fact that they tagged Trey Smith and they're keeping him. I think that we all need to brace ourselves to get ready for another patchwork left tackle. And by the way, you're also downgrading. I don't care who's playing left guard. You're downgrading at left guard this year because you don't have Joe Tooney anymore. So now there are two question marks on the left side of the line where it was not good last year with one question mark on the left side of the line. So right now, and there's probably a master plan when all things are said and done, we'll probably look at it and maybe breathe a sigh of relief to an extent. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we will. But as of right now, it's hard to not think that as things stand on March 10th, that right now this team is actually worse off than they were when the offseason began.
I agree.
I'm saying in general, because they've re-signed Bolton, they've re-signed Brown, they've tagged Trey Smith, but they've lost Joe Tooney, and they don't have the most pressing need fixed yet at left tackle. That's all probably going to work itself out in some capacity, but as of right now, you've got to have a little bit of trust because it, on paper, looks like the team is worse than it was when they got blown out in the Super Bowl.
I agree, but there was nothing they could do collectively by March 10th where they weren't going to look worse, right? Even if they had gotten Ronnie Stanley, they'd still have a hole at left guard. They don't have Bolton. They don't have Reed. They don't have a Minnehue. They might not have Hollywood. Maybe they don't have Trey Smith. There was never going to be the right combination of moves to make them better yet. They have to get the draft right in order for that to happen. But that's been this offseason all the way through. It's always been pick your poison. It has been because they don't have enough money to bring everybody back. They had too many free agents.
Let's say that they were able to offer Stanley the same deal that he got in Baltimore, and let's say that he signed with the Chiefs, and you let Bolton walk, you don't re-sign Hollywood Brown. Like, how do you feel? Like, let's flip the script a little bit.
Which one would I prefer?
Yeah, where they're at right now, or being able to sign Ronnie Stanley
those other guys? Well, I don't know. That's a great question. Before I answer that, either way, they would not have been better than they were the team walking off the field from the Super Bowl yet, right? They have to get that better in the draft. Would I have preferred Stanley? That's a good question. Stanley's Orlando Brown light by grades from everything I've found. It's hard because he's better than what they had. they were so bad. Like, I don't know. The problem is that the controllable thing that they've done is trade Joe Tooney. That's the controllable. They essentially chose Trey Smith over Joe Tooney by almost every account, right? Could they have let Trey Smith go and kept Joe Tooney? I think they would have the same sort of problem either way.
Yeah, so I don't hate the move of them letting Tooney go and hanging on to Trey Smith.
It contributes to this. So that one was probably inevitable. You were either going to have to pick Tooney or you were going to have to pick Smith. So I'll call that a wash, right? Either way, it was, you know, what was the analogy you used? Birds in a bush or something on Friday?
Yeah, two birds and
yeah, whatever. Yeah. It was the same thing. So then it's like, okay, would you rather have Stanley or would you rather have something else at left tackle plus Hollywood and Bolton and all the...
We saw last season.
I know
Bolton and Hollywood.
I just don't know. And here's what I think about Ronnie Stanley. I think we all think of Ronnie Stanley as this knight in shining armor.
No, but it's better.
He's better, but that again, the better than the worst is only a little bit better. I still think there's an opportunity, and I don't know anything about these other tackles that you mentioned that are being reported with, like, absolutely nothing. So I've got to have time to go look up their pass block.
And by the way, Albert Breer reported that there are a couple of other offensive tackle free agents out there. Jalen Moore, who was with the 49ers, and Dan Moore Jr., who was with the Steelers. Those are a couple of other guys that apparently the Chiefs are targeting.
All right, so we got Jalen Moore and Dan Moore Jr.
Yeah. And
I'm going to ask you this. We've all heard of Ronnie Stanley. Have you ever heard of Dan Moore Jr. before 15 minutes ago?
Don't care.
Yeah.
Couldn't care less. It's got to be better than what they had last season at left tackle. And like that's the gauge, that's the filter in which you have to look at this through. Like, it's not about, hey, they've got to go get a guy that we all know and that is really, really good. They just got to be better. They got to be better and more reliable and more consistent than what they were a season ago. Breer continues to go on in his report and says that he thinks there's a good chance that the Chiefs will land one of these guys, Jalen Moore or Dan Moore Jr., by midday today.
So they're the backup plan. I'm just pulling this up here real quick. Okay, so just for the sake of this conversation, Ronnie Stanley graded last year, according to Pro Football Focus, as the 21st best tackle. Jalen Moore, the 42nd best tackle. Dan Moore, the 65th best tackle as a pass blocker. Jalen Moore, interestingly, is a better run blocker, according to PFF, than Ronnie Stanley. But
Now do a combination of Wanya Morris, Kingsley Sue, Matai Ia, and DJ Humphreys.
Well, we'd have to go back. The two former are very low. I don't know where Humphreys, but here's what's interesting. Jalen Moore overall is graded higher than Ronnie Stanley. The Chiefs don't necessarily need a run blocking tackle, though. You got to only kind of look at the pass blocking. So here's the point of all of this. How much better is Ronnie Stanley than Jalen Moore? I have no idea. No clue. But we're going to pretend like he's way better. Okay, when we look at this offseason as a whole, when in reality, if they're able to keep Hollywood and Bolton and all these players and then add this Jalen Moore dude that nobody's ever heard of before right now, okay, right? It's something. And we've just kind of been asking for something at left tackle because they essentially had nothing until they moved Joe Tooney over there. So I don't know yet what I think of the Stanley move because I still have to see what they're going to do at left tackle. And it doesn't really matter because Stanley was never going to hit the market anyway. We thought he would, but he didn't. He didn't even get the chance to hit the market. So it doesn't really matter now. So when we evaluate the pivot, I think to bring in Bolton, bring back Hollywood Brown, and to bring some of these guys back, we're going to have to still wait and see what they do at left tackle. But I don't know how much re-signing Nick Bolton and Hollywood Brown have even had on their ability to get a left tackle anyway, right? If they signed Ronnie Stanley, I don't think they would have been able to do that. But because they've done those things doesn't mean they can't upgrade still at left tackle.
So here's the other thing. So this is Dan Moore. I'm talking about Dan Moore, not Jalen Moore. Dan Moore from the Steelers. Okay. He's played with them since 2021. He's played 64 games. He started 64 games at left tackle. So he's been a consistent left tackle for them. Now, I don't know.
The Steelers have been consistently bad at pass blocking for a long time.
But what I'm saying is that, like, if you contrast him, there might be more upside with Jalen Moore. And I know that you're looking at PFF and all of that. Jalen Moore, on the flip side, has played for the Niners since 2021. These guys are exactly the same age. They're both coming off their rookie deals. Jalen Moore has played in 47 games and has started 7 of them. So if you're talking about a higher upside, then it's, you know, a guy like Jalen Moore probably because of the way he's grading out on PFF. Dan Moore, from a consistency point of view at left tackle, he's played a bunch of games at that position over the course of his 4 years in the NFL.
There aren't a lot of great left tackles. They're almost never available. So it's difficult. And again, it's not like the Chiefs had a chance to go get Ronnie Stanley and instead chose. And that's the way this is being painted. It's being painted by like, oh, they could have had Ronnie Stanley, but instead they re-signed a middle linebacker and an old receiver and a guard. Like, those aren't the positions you prioritize. But the reality is they haven't even had a chance to go get a left tackle yet. So, like, I'm not going to dog those other moves for great critical players to the Chiefs, right? These are critical players in the Chiefs dynasty. It's so funny how an offseason gets started. And now all of a sudden, Brett Veach, he's crazy for giving that kind of money to a middle linebacker and a guard. A month ago, it was like, oh my God, what are they going to do without Nick Bolton or Trey Smith? right? We got to see how the chips fall. The Chiefs don't just get to pick and choose who they have chances to go get. They may not have a choice but to go draft somebody and take another swing that way. Like, you can only control so many things, right? Like, it's Stanley didn't even get to free agency. So DK Metcalf traded to the Steelers. Devontae Adams lands with the Rams. Miles Garrett, it is, in fact, all about the money as he sets a new deal there in Cleveland. No surprise that it's about the money. It usually is about the money. Josh Allen then signs a record-breaking contract with guaranteed money that makes him the highest-paid player. He had a lot of time left. I haven't been able to dig in. I would imagine this frees up some wiggle room for the Bills to go be able to attack free agency. Those are those are the biggest headliners. Did I miss any of the headliners?
There's a couple of other, maybe not quite as big. This one's not quite as big, but the Vikings are keeping Aaron Jones with the $20 million deal. They re-signed him.
He got what?
He got $20 million for 1 year with the Vikings. I'm sorry, two-year, $20 million deal.
Okay.
I got the number wrong. But but $13 million of it is guaranteed.
That's okay. It's all right. Yeah. Like, oh, no.
So that's happening. And then this came out this morning from Adam Schefter. Aaron Rodgers could be an option for the Steelers.
So predictable after they traded for Metcalf.
Yeah.
The Steelers need to make that happen. Even if they bring Justin Fields back, too. I bring them both in. You run a package with Fields and Rodgers. I like that for the Steelers quite a bit.
I wonder what's going to happen with the Seahawks. I know there was speculation that
Seahawks and Sam Darnold. Yes. That's the other one.
Is that done? I don't know if that's done. I know that they're working on it. At least there's mutual interest, but I haven't seen that that's actually done.
This is so crazy. Okay. Well, Diana Rossini, like yesterday, the Steelers are apparently going to make an offer to Darnold either. So that is, it's that most believe he's going to go to Seattle, but I guess Pittsburgh is going to be allowed. It looks like,
Geno Smith to the Raiders? Did we talk about that one already? Did that happen on Friday?
Smith to the Raiders, so which I actually Smith love quite a bit. I like it. Look, it's interesting because there hasn't been one where I've been like, right? Geno to the Raiders makes a lot of sense to me. The Steelers sort of rebuilding and retooling. The Seahawks sort of retooling and rebuilding a little bit. If they do that through Sam Darnold, makes some sense to me. The Steelers, what they're doing makes a ton of sense to me because they're just trying to, you know, to complement what always makes them good. So everything has made sense. Ronnie Stanley returning to the Ravens made sense. Devontae Adams to the Rams makes sense. It all makes sense. I get all of it. But what keeps jumping out to me is how expensive it's getting for some of these key players. Like these contracts, and I get it. It's because the cap went up and all of these things. But that's when, Tommy, like when we look at the totality of the barrage that's happening, I don't mind what the Chiefs did with Bolton and Hollywood. It feels to me like they're getting decent. We'll see what happens with Trey Smith. He's the interesting one. But this money is huge. Huge going around places. So Hollywood Brown for $10 million? I mean, I'll take that.
I'll take it. Yeah. And you know, remember, like, and I know you mentioned this last segment. They basically signed him for what they signed him for last year. Kind of
like a do-over
of, you know, what could have been last season. So I think that it made sense for both sides. You know, Brown coming in for another year to try to hopefully stay healthy, improve his value on the open market next season. But, you know, I guess, yeah, while for him, I'm sure he would have loved to play all of the games for the Chiefs last year. But knowing that he was going to have to jump into like this loaded free agent market out there right now, it's kind of a good thing, I think, that he is able to come right back to the Chiefs and, you know, get another year and then be able to prove it and go out and get a big bunch of money, hopefully next offseason from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we'll get to I want to talk about Miles Garrett specifically, too. But it what's interesting about all of it to me is like the Chiefs are going to try, I think, one more time. I think that's the part that's also getting clear. Like they're going to make one more push this year to kind of push them all in. And it makes sense to do it, right, with the Kelce news and all of these things. They're inevitably going to have to do a bigger retool, but I don't think they feel like it's the time for that yet. And I don't disagree with that. Andy Reid's still there. Travis Kelce's coming back. I don't disagree with it at all, but it feels that way. If they were ready to rebuild, and to some of the critics, like, no, you don't give that. Maybe you don't give that money to Nick Bolton. Nick Bolton and Trey Smith are younger players. Like, they're a part of the future. So it's not like they're sacrificing things to go get them. What they have to do is draft really well. They need a really solid 2022 type draft again to retool some of this, because they're going to lean into a lot of young players this year, more than last year, more than last year. But they could also be a whole lot better offensively, Tommy, than they were last year, if they finally get an opportunity to have all their receivers at one time. We have to remember, while they're inevitably going to lose players and run out of money, there is a world, depending on this Worthy situation now that we touched on in the last segment, where they have Rice, Worthy, Hollywood Brown, and Travis Kelce all on the field at the same time. Like, they never had anything close to that last year. So remember that stuff too. And it's just like, it's expensive. They're running out of money because they've got good players. That's what happens in this league. So now let's look at a guy like Myles Garrett, who I didn't think was going to come back to Cleveland. They never showed any interest in trading him. He wanted to be gone. Making him a record-breaking deal, I guess, cures what ails you, right? Now he's fine. Now he's happy again. So I think that's a terrible deal for the Browns, quite frankly. Is it a terrible deal because he's not worth it? No, he's of course he's worth it. He's definitely worth it, right? He's worth it for sure. But he's older, and here come the Browns again with a huge guaranteed deal. And it's like, why? How often do you ever have an opportunity for a player who's about to be 30 to trade and get significant draft capital, and you go and you just re-sign? Like, what the hell are the Browns going to do right now?
Well, and it hasn't shown that having him as the cornerstone of that defense leads you to a bunch of success. Not that he's not individually great. He absolutely is individually elite and phenomenal.
He's incredible.
But they need value extending beyond him. Like, they need to spread out that value and rebuild in multiple other places. And I don't know why you would want to deplete your resources for a long time to give to Myles Garrett, when basically what you're doing is you're locking up all of that capital with him. Again, he's amazing. Don't get me wrong. He'd be amazing for any team that would have him. But the Browns are not in a situation to where you can have one cornerstone guy making all that money. And they've also got, obviously, the horrible contract with Deshaun Watson that they did a little bit of restructuring with a few days ago to free up a little bit of money, like, whatever, that's fine. I mean, they've made some pretty substantially terrible financial decisions as of late with their contracts.
So bad. They have no chance to win a Super Bowl. And, like, no chance. Here's the other crazy part that they screwed up. You were gifted the ability to break up with him and not piss off your fan base.
Yeah.
Because he didn't alienate. I don't have any problem with what Myles Garrett did, because that's sort of what happens now. But you finally get this opportunity to trade an asset like that and not make the fan base hate you.
And what do you think they could have gotten in return for him? I mean, like, they would have gotten a lot.
Myles
Garrett? They would have gotten a lot for him, you know? And yeah, so
they would have at least gotten a first.
Yeah.
If not, like, 2 seconds or, you know, a second of that. It would have been enough to justify it for sure. And the only reason you don't do it is because your fan base is upset. Now you're trading your best player. Okay, that you don't want to do that. But he allowed you to do it because he sort of pre-broke up with the fans. Like, he did it for you. You're like, all right, well, you know, we just couldn't make it work. We got to trade him now. It's his fault. They are so bad at what they do. So bad. The Deshaun Watson contract will be the worst contract in sports. It's going to take a long time to find a worse one, especially in football, but just in general. It's going to take a long time to find a worse contract than that one. And then this one's not as bad a contract, because Myles Garrett's a great player, but it's not going to help them. I mean, he's not going to help. He can't singularly win them a Super Bowl. Can he play quarterback? right? Can he catch the ball? Can he run the ball? Nick Chubb's a free agent. Like, they got nothing. Nothing. And here's the other stupid part. And I don't know why I'm spending so much time with this. Like, they tried to kind of start blowing it up last year. They traded Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Like, make up your mind.
Yeah, it's like they want to try to start to unravel this. And like, look, I think everybody knows, like, the Browns need a hard reset. You know, like, but they're trying to play both sides of it. And that's what this Myles Garrett re-signing, like, you're not committing one way or the other. Either commit to blowing the whole thing up and eating the bad decision you made with Deshaun Watson and try to get value elsewhere and try to rebuild through the draft and, you know, through other things. That's fine. That's one direction you can go. Or I guess, like, you're pot committed enough to be able to just continue to try to, but they're trying to play both sides of it.
I think Jerry Jones got in there somehow and is like taking control.
That's a page out of the old Jerry Jones playbook. It's crazy. And you know what? Honestly, the Cowboys are the same way. The Bengals have been the same way so far this offseason. Like, they're tagging T. Higgins. They're trying to work on re-signing Jamar Chase.
Good quarterback.
Well, true, right? So they're a little bit ahead. I mean, they're a lot ahead of where the Browns are. But all three of those teams are like kind of riding the fence. Commit one way or the other. Either commit to, like, we're going to have a new era, we're going to try to rebuild, or don't. But don't try to do both things, because if you're trying to do both things, you're not going to win at all.
Whatever. Too much time on the Browns, but that deal. Okay, so real quick, Josh Allen, they get him to about where Dak is, so I think that one makes a lot of sense. And then but until they're able to restructure it, I don't think we're going to know how much we like it. But I assume there's room to. What do you think of the DK Metcalf trade? Because I actually like that for the Steelers quite a bit. And a second rounder is more than I thought that the Seahawks would get. So I don't mind them trading him as much, because I think that's a better return than I thought they'd get for him.
Well, the world collectively laughed when the Seahawks said they wanted a first, for right. Metcalf. Like, yeah, that's not going to happen. For a $30 million a year deal. It's a hefty price tag, though, even though it's a second for the Steelers. They give up a second this year. And then, of course, they also give up, that big contract. I mean, it's $150 million deal for DK Metcalf. So, I think that they anticipate
they gave him a new deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, that was a whole part of it. Like, whoever traded for him had to sign him to a big deal.
Yeah. I'm going to pull that. I didn't see the $150 million. I'm going to pull that statement back out of my mouth. I don't like that for the Steelers. I like it for next year. But in totality, that's way too much money for
that. Was
for
a contingent on whoever traded for DK Metcalf was that they signed him to an extension. And that's what the Steelers did.
I didn't know that it had already happened. I missed that development in it. But there's too much. There's too much. All right. Well, that's it for Sports Daily on a Monday. There was always going to be too much to cram in today, so we'll continue to do it throughout the week. We'll stretch it out. We've got K-State basketball tomorrow already. All of this Chiefs news that we're talking about, we'll get in Felix Johnson to help us digest it all, as well as some of the other big, massive things. And then we get, I think, the official free agency starts Wednesday too. So it's just a ton. We're going to have a ton of fun with it. Still play catch up. What do we think of all these moves? Don't forget, you got coaches shows, Brian Green, Paul Mills, Christy Breadbinner, back to back, 6, 7, 8 o'clock tonight. Tommy, enjoy this Monday. Enjoy this time change.
Yeah. Appreciate it. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Max will be back with us as well. Thanks, Max. Thanks to Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, for joining the show. I'm Jake Falbrock. We'll see you Tuesday.